Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell and Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
So today we're going to try something.
Well, since we're talking about value of experience, we just thought we'd do a little me story.
Yeah.
Today it's me. So kind of just talking about our background and history and stories of how we got to where we are.
Yeah.
I was actually born in New Jersey, and pretty much grew up there, although we moved around a bit and lived in Houston and England. My dad worked for an oil company, so we got moved around a bit there in the beginning, and he's from England, so we have a lot of family in England. So it was a fun stint. When I was little, I went to school at a proper British school and had a proper British accent and everything. And then we moved back to New Jersey and I quickly lost it within like 2 weeks.
My mom
I was back to the, you know, walking and talking.
So, New Jersey is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. But it was a lovely place to grow up. In fact, I really didn't know what architecture history I had surrounding me until I went back later after we'd moved away. H.H. Richardson, you know, train station and really fabulous houses and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, it was a community outside of New York City. So, but basically I wanted to be an architect since I was 8. I kind of just started drawing houses and sketching them. I'd have my dad bring home graph paper for me. And I was so excited when I discovered how you could hide the closets within the walls and things like that. And I mean, I was very prolific and had to have a certain pencil.
Oh my gosh.
Had to be sharpened a certain way. I mean, clearly I was already on the path to being an architect with that kind of geekiness.
Did you watch The Brady Bunch?
I did, but that wasn't really architecture.
Well, he's an architect.
I know, but he doesn't really talk about anything he
does. That's true. I was fascinated.
I always liked looking at the set of the house.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I was just drawing them. And then also back then, when you're in the grocery store checking out, they always sold floor plan books of houses. You know, now we go online. So I just loved staring at those and studying them. And my grandparents lived in D.C., and so we would drive down a lot. And so it was like a 5 to 7 hour drive, depending on traffic. And I would basically draw floor plans or study those floor plan books.
Wow. I did not know that.
And so my mom probably loved that because she could keep me so busy, right? Although except my brother, you know, we still had the back and forth going on. And she was thrilled when Walkmans came available. But yeah, so and then when I was visiting my grandparents, I always liked to get up early. So I would get up early and my grandmother got up early and she and I would sit in her room and she always had some, you know, arts theater show, PBS show on and we'd talk about art and dance and all that stuff. And then she talked to me about how I like to draw plans. And she said, you know, you could be an architect. And I was kind of like, well, what's that? And she told me what an architect was. And she had a friend whose daughter was going to school for architecture, actually at Virginia Tech at the time, which she was probably one of the few women in the school then. And she said, you know, she has her own desk and it's really cool. And so from then on, I was like, oh yeah, that's what I'm going to be. And so I just kind of had my arrow set to do that. So in school, I took all the math. I took all the science. I took mechanical drafting, which I don't know that they have that necessarily anymore. But I did all that and then applied to schools. And I ended up going to University of Maryland, which is right outside D.C. And I mean, D.C., what a great city to study in.
Seriously.
And then there's Baltimore and Annapolis and all these great places of architecture to use to study. So it was a really, really great school for that. Now, you didn't get into the architecture school right away. So after about a year, you took pre-architecture classes. And after about a year and a half, you then submitted a portfolio. And so that portfolio had to include the drafting and then also kind of sketches and freehand. And I had no idea that I was going to have to do that. So I was madly taking art classes in college and trying to teach myself how to sketch and draw. I'm not one of those natural people that can do it. I had to be taught. And by the time I was submitting my portfolio, I guess I wasn't that good. So when I went to meet, they said, everything is great, except your drawing absolutely sucks.
Oh.
What he said was, it's absolutely horrible. That's what he told me.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I just was like, well, I guess I'm not going to go to architecture school. What else am I going to do? So I quickly went and took a bunch of math classes. And then the week before school, I guess somebody dropped out of going and I was on the wait list. So I got in. So I ended up getting in. So a week before school started, I was then in architecture. Kind of wasted my summer on all that calculus, but I do like calculus. So maybe it wasn't so bad. So, so then, had two grueling, intense years of design school at University of Maryland, which was great. And they had a fantastic program in the summers. One, we went to Paris and just drew the whole city. And I have a whole sketchbook of it. And I really learned how to draw and sketch then. I mean, that's what I should have done, right?
Mm-hmm. Down to Paris.
So that was really fun. And also watercoloring and doing some more rendering type techniques. But really
beautiful
studying the city.
Yeah, beautiful drawings. Yeah.
So really studying the city and understanding proportion, I'd say. I always told my parents that was the best money spent on my education because we drew it. And when you draw it, you really understand how the building goes together and the proportions and the scale and how the windows relate to the solid parts of the elevation. And then studying when I also got to go to Rome another summer because I enjoyed the Paris so much. I went to Rome and we really studied a lot about the piazzas and how circulation happens, and it's on the edge or it's in the middle and colonnades. And so there was just a really great education with both of those summers. And then I had at Maryland, they offer a Bachelor of Science in Architecture. So at schools, you can either get a Bachelor of Architecture, which is a 5-year, or a 4-year, which is a Bachelor of Science. So with that, I then went and got my Master's of Architecture. My parents had moved back to Houston at the time, so I was sick of winter. We had had a whole week where it did nothing but snow, ice. We had no school. The liquor stores were empty. it's so funny because me and my friends, college roommates, all talk about all the stuff we did in that week. But anyway, I was sick of the snow and ice and swore I would never see that again, never live with it. Don't care if I never see another flake of snow the rest of my life. So moved to Texas and went to Texas A&M. And I actually picked them because I really wanted to learn more about construction detailing and how to put a building together. Because at Maryland, I felt like we mostly learned mostly about design. So I didn't feel like I needed to go to a big design school. Well, it turns out I did know a lot about how buildings went together. And what they offered at A&M, I realized, was the value of research and design. They had their PhD program. And so they also had a lot of really just cool classes and programs. And they had what's called a Viz Lab. And, they had a psychologist that would work with people looking at images and what kind of responses they would have. And so I was able to really enjoy all of that. And that's where I learned about pattern language and the book we covered in our second season. And it was, for that, it was a really great experience. Now, I will say it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. I used to tell people it wasn't exactly the middle of nowhere because Houston was an hour and a half away, but you could see it from the back porch. And that was definitely a culture change for me going from Maryland to College Station. I had people call me little lady and miss, and people were opening doors for me. Northeast, we don't do that.
No, you don't.
And I was kind of, what are these people doing? I can open my own door. Don't they know? They're just being polite. It's part of that Southern charm. Mm-hmm. So it took a bit to get used to all that and graduated. And then I ended up working in Dallas for a year at a really big firm. So I was really interested in schools because I had kind of studied about education and behavior and design. And so I wanted to work on schools. So I went to work for this really large firm, Corrigan Associates in Dallas, about 250 people, and had to wear like a suit to work every day. I got there at 6 a.m. and I left shortly after 6 p.m. And I usually worked one full day on the weekend, and I made $24,000. And oh my gosh, it was really hard. So I always, you know, all my young architects, when they start coming to work for you, they come and they really don't know anything. And I really didn't know anything. All of my drawings were just completely red. You know, they'd mark up everything. But then for some reason, they love to just send me out on my own to meetings with clients and talk. I was doing banks for about 6 months, and it was definitely dropping me in the deep end of the pool. And they were going, oh, look, she's swimming. So mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what that experience was like. And then I did finally get to work on a really big new high school. And then I was really depressed at seeing how all that process went and how much money we pay these giant PhD education people that seem to not be able to tell me how many rooms they need to support their program, how many classrooms and what size and how many kids are going to be in there. So then the architects had to go figure all that out. And that was in the early days of Excel. So I was really excited about using the Excel program.
You're insane.
I know. I love it. So that was kind of, and I was only there a year. My best friend, and she was the maid of honor at the time of my wedding that year, was killed in a car accident. So 2 months to the day of my wedding, I was carrying her casket down at her funeral. So that was pretty eye-opening about life. And really, I didn't need to work 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and on the weekends. And so decided I didn't want to be in Dallas anymore. And we moved to Austin, Texas. Much calmer pace of life. It was an 8:30 to 5:30 town. And you know, there was the green belts and the hike and bike trail, and the city was new and fresh and growing. And then there was always something fun to do, mm-hmm. right? So moved here, and then I haven't left. That was in 1998. So been enjoying Austin. So I worked first for a woman-owned firm because I really wanted to work for a woman architect. And there were actually a bunch of us working there. Well, she was basically getting a lot of the public jobs because of the woman minority status. Mm-hmm. And so we wouldn't necessarily be like the lead design architect on these. We would be helping them. And so some of them were schools. And so we got to kind of design a little bit and do more of that programming and things like that. And that was, you know, okay. But she really never helped guide us or teach us. So I was just left figuring out stuff on my own, and I just finally had it, and I quit one day, and she chased me down out of the building, down the street in the corner of 4th and Congress, begged me to stay, and I was like, no, I'm so done. So after that, I found another job at one of the larger firms at the time in Austin. Now Austin has a gazillion architecture firms. I used to know who all the architects were, and now I definitely don't. Interesting place is commercial architecture, mostly offices and private schools. So I kind of worked on some of that. And I did a lot of the design work actually there and doing a lot of renderings. And, you know, being a woman architect, you work with a lot of men. Now, the other firm I worked for at Corrigan had a huge interior design department. So kind of any of my female friends were interior designers. And it was kind of interesting because you could, like, overhear the woman who ran that studio. Like, we just all hear, like, they talk about, oh, well, we want them to wear short skirts and because they help sell the job and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, I know. Insane, right?
Crazy. It wasn't even that long ago.
I know. Yeah. So then the next place I worked at ran into more annoying men. And you know, this one guy just, he felt threatened by me because I could design and draw and do all these things right. And just do it very quickly. And so he was one of the principals in the firm. And one day he came in and just lit into me in front of all of my coworkers. I had been doing some renderings and he said, get up, let me sit down. And I was like, okay. And he sits down and he's trying to draw over top of my drawings. And then he said, well, this color isn't. And I said, well, I'm not finished yet. And I was going to get more markers. And he just eventually got up and he threw the markers on the table and he goes, well, then get more markers, and storms out. So I was kind of like, I'm really done working for people like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot that women architects can say about working with men architects. So I had always wanted to start my own firm. And so eventually, so I basically was like, that's what I'm going to do. And I eventually got a couple jobs on the side. And I really liked doing houses, and I started getting houses, and then I was able to finally head out and do that on my own. So I've had my business since 2003, So it's been
a little while now.
Yeah, almost 20 mm-hmm. years, 19 mm-hmm. years. So it's been really rewarding. It's been a lot of hard work in the beginning, but at least it was just all for me and not for some jerky male architect. I do have some lovely male architect friends, I will say. It's not that everyone is like that.
Tell me what you would say the big difference is between moving from commercial to residential.
Yeah. So the other thing I really liked about residential was the emotional connection and how much more, you know, involved you are in the design with the person. And they, you know, they get to know you and I get to know them. And I know if, you know, they drink coffee and they drink tea or, you know, all these different things. And it just, I don't know, and then I could just help create these great spaces for them to live in. And so in commercial, you know, I mean, you'd make friends with your clients, but you weren't necessarily telling them, here's what I'm doing this weekend, or you wouldn't later necessarily be at their house for dinner or mm-hmm. things like that. And also in commercial, it's so money driven. There's not very many emotional decisions. It's mostly all budget driven. And so sometimes it's just really hard to get good design out of that because it just keeps getting cut and keeps getting cut.
So you like the emotional part. You like that connection.
I do, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. there is a lot of emotional parts.
Yeah, there yeah. are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really fun and it's been really rewarding and exciting. Sometimes it's really hard, especially when the economy dies. Yeah. And you stare at the phone and just tell it to ring and it doesn't.
Like in 2009?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 What did you do then? Because you had employees at that point.
I didn't have any employees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I had just had my son.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of hard. I had a couple of clients because also at that time you had to pay cash if you were doing any construction. You couldn't really get loans or you had to pay you had to put 50% cash down. So I did a lot of smaller jobs, you know, kitchen remodels and things like that. And then when I didn't have something to do, I really needed to occupy my brain. And so I just started going back to what I did when I was a kid. And I was just drawing floor plans.
Oh my gosh.
So I just draw floor plans of houses.
And you had already designed your own home and built your own home.
Yeah, I did mm-hmm. that right as I started my own practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really good get your feet wet so then I know what it's like to be the client on
and
the other
still,
side.
And you still live in that house.
I do. I thought I'd only live there 5 years and mm-hmm. here we are.
Things have changed in your neighborhood though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where the part I live in Austin is right close to downtown and the big park and it's jaw-dropping how much that has changed.
Do you think you would do anything or have you decided you would do something different on the design of the house if you were doing it over again?
I probably would because when I designed it, I didn't have a family. So I think I would make it just a little bit bigger and maybe add another room.
So out of all of these things, since we're talking about experience this season, what is it? What experience do you think? Is it all the experiences together or is there one sort of touch point that where you really got the experience to? Was it just the uncomfortableness of working for someone that didn't appreciate you that gave you that boldness to move forward? Or what experience has been the most beneficial for you long term?
I mean, luckily, I was always put in. I mean, I've heard horror stories of some of my other friends in college that had to just draw bathrooms for a whole year. So I always did get to have a lot of great experience. I had one at that larger firm I went to work for, one of the first projects was taking over the construction administration on this huge community center. And no one had really completed the drawings fully. And I had to figure that out. And it was mostly me on the job every day and the client calling and yelling at me or the contractor calling and yelling at me and how you deal with all of that and making sure everything's going smoothly. And because in commercial, it's a lot of paperwork. So especially in construction administration, so following through with all of the paper, the proper paperwork, and it also has to be documented in a certain way and all of those things. I also did a project at the University of Texas, a dining hall, and that was an even more amount of paperwork. And now this was right at the cusp of scanning and PDFs and all of that. So it was still a lot of paper. It wasn't necessarily, you know, that you could just email stuff to people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like the way we fill out forms now without ever reading them and just pushing the button to sign our name. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes. And it was funny because that guy, decided he was going to get, he lit into me. He was a facilities planner at UT, and I was there, and the senior architect was not on the job that day, and they asked a question, and I said, I don't know the answer. I'm going to have to get back to you and come, you know, and he just lit into me. So I just got up and walked out because I wasn't going to put up with that. And they actually called my boss back at the office and told him what I did, and they were like, that's what you should have done. There's no reason for you to listen to that. So luckily I had that going for me.
No need to get yelled at.
Right. No. He was sitting there drinking. He had gotten a whole tray of food at the cafeteria and had his milk in a glass and everything.
You walked out.
He's a funny character.
That's funny.
Yeah, but I will say when I went out on my own, that was one thing, was something goes wrong, you don't get to call your boss. You don't get to say, hey, I'm going to let my boss handle that. Nope. I turned around and, oh, it's just me.
Yeah. Nobody else to ask.
So, yeah. So that was definitely the biggest experience, I think, learning experience was starting my own farm.
So doing it, just doing it for yourself.
And, you know, I didn't have a business plan. I just did it. So a lot of these people that say they got to fill out a business plan and figure out all this stuff before they do it, you just jump off the cliff and dive. There's usually water when you land.
But I know architecture in general is a difficult profession for starting new businesses. So you must have some magic in there.
Yeah, that. And also there were other architects at the time that would need some help. And so that was also how I was able to fill in time. If, you know, I didn't have necessarily my own projects, but I could be helping draw a building, or mostly they hired me to do renderings, which is so funny. Again, I didn't get into architecture school the first time because I couldn't draw. When I was in graduate school, I did get to teach drawing, actually. Absolutely. And I used to always tell my students, you can be taught. This isn't, I know there's some people with this innate ability that just naturally flows out of their hand through the pencil or charcoal or whatever, but you can be taught. So then since I was taught, I was able to teach a lot of students how to draw, which was really fun to watch.
That's satisfying.
I did really enjoy that. And also taught them a lot of different rendering techniques, watercolor and colored pencil. And at A&M, the undergraduates only get one class of that, which at my school, we had three or four. So I had to cram all of that, and I had to write my own syllabus. Nobody helped me write my own syllabus and teach them all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they had an immense amount of homework, but they all were so proud of themselves at the end. And then I'd have other students come up and ask, what class is it that you're teaching next semester? And so I'd always say, well, make sure you talk to your fellow classmates first, because it's a lot of work. Like, I taught them how to letter, the architectural lettering.
I love
which
that.
I don't even think they learn that anymore.
Really? We learned it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't really draft anymore. Mm-hmm. It's all computer.
It's true. Mm-hmm. But just when we note things up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm such a dinosaur. I definitely have to draw all the time and sketch. So not as much into the 3D rendering, although it's very beneficial and helpful for everyone.
It's made it a lot easier, for sure.
We used to have to make the models out of cardboard and glue and X-Acto knives. And, you know, we were doing that through the middle of the night, and people are slicing their fingers.
Oh, gosh.
I was never very good at it, but got the idea across. Anyway, I guess that's my story. I've had, you know, a number of people work for me through the years, which has been great. I keep in touch with most of them. And it's funny, I have this money tree plant I got, I think, maybe the second year in to starting my business. And I still have it today. And it's really large. And I'd had a Christmas open house holiday party a couple years ago. And one of my former employees came and he said, oh, my God, look how big the tree is now.
That's so funny.
We'll see how big it is when I close this shop.
Exactly. Let it grow. Well, thank you. That was wonderful. I love hearing your story.
Hopefully someone else thought that was fun to listen to. I don't know. Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.